Well, good evening. It's our custom to start on time, so let's begin. Good evening and welcome to the first presentation in this our 17th series of talks on faraway places with strange sounding names, sponsored by the Friends of WKU Libraries. My name is Brian Coots, and as head of the Department of Library Public Services at WKU, I coordinate this series with help from our webmaster taking pictures, Hai Wong Wan, and our research instruction coordinator, Brian Carson. Ryan Dowell and Patrick Peters designed our posters, and our technical specialist tonight is Shadden Melke. Our speaker tonight is a native of Memphis, Tennessee, who moved with his family to Bowling Green. And growing up, he said he wanted to be Indiana Jones, or a firefighter, or a professional skateboarder. And he was influenced by Tony Hawk, 80s movies, and skate rock. After graduating from Bowling Green High School, he enrolled in the photojournalism program at WKU. And his passion for photojournalism came from a WKU student, David Burton, who was assisting his high school yearbook class. He worked for the Daily News nearly his whole college career. He began working for WKU in 2008 as university photographer, and his responsibilities include nothing less than the visual image of the university. His pictures have been featured in or on nearly every university publication and website. An experienced world traveler, he's photographed in Germany, China, Peru, and in January of 2016, he accompanied a group of students led by WKU Kinesiology, Recreation, and Sport Professor Raymond Poth on a 17-day study abroad trip to New Zealand. The group took surfing lessons, made a blackwater rafting trip, cruised the world-famous Milford Sound, swam with the dolphins, explored the film sets from The Lord of Rings, and engaged with the native Maori culture. Here to share his spectacular photographs on that trip, please welcome Clinton Lewis. Clinton.
Hello, good evening. I'm Clinton, and I'm a photographer, so should have a really good slideshow. But we'll start off that the professor on the trip that truly organized everything is Dr. Raymond Poth, who's, I think, hiding in the back. So, yeah, he's in the comfy chair. And he will correct any mistakes or erroneous mentions that I have, because he's much better at these things than I am. But our trip first just came out of a great question of, well, we should take a great trip, and where do we go? So Dr. Poth had been to New Zealand. This idea had been in his mind for a couple of years, so it was really, well, why not New Zealand? And especially since Dr. Poff's focus is, you know, recreation and tourism, well, nobody does a better job at making the rest of the world jealous about what they have than New Zealand. So it was perfect to set up a class to study the recreation and tourism industry, the number one industry in New Zealand, then, you know, to go and check it out. So we managed to scrape together 10 students, which was a perfect number. And so we set off in January 2nd, made a stopover in LA to catch flights. And this is one of the senior vice presidents with Air New Zealand who treated us to the first class lounge where they keep all the VIP lists and, you know, really had a great time. And our first stop, we flew into Auckland. From LA to Auckland, it's about a 14-hour flight. Not terrible, and it's not the 23-hour flight that it used to be. And our first destination was the quaint surfing town of Raglan. And we set up with the local surf school instructor, Charlie. He's the guy with the crazy beard there on the right. And we retreated to his eco lodge and surf lessons. You know, this is the news in Raglan. What's the surf and what are the swells like? And that's pretty much Raglan to a T. One of the first team building exercises we had the students do was to form together in groups and cook their first meal together after going grocery shopping in the little town. So, you know, that was a quick way for the students to gel together and really, you know, get to know each other and dinner depended on it, so that everybody had to be all in, I think. And then I say we right after that afternoon, after we landed, we were on the beach surfing. There's apparently a world-famous left-hand break. Is that right, Raymond? Yep. In Raglan. It was prominently featured in a 60s surf movie called Endless Summer. A group of surfers figured out, you know, a great path to stay in summer for an entire year and surf 365 days. And one of the best breaks they found was in New Zealand, in Raglan. After surfing, the next day we went to an organic, very sustainable farm, kind of a tourist farm, called Raglan Eels. And they do farm eels, which is one of the more interesting aspects of the farm, but they had great honey, and they're studying a certain type of whitefish that's indigenous to New Zealand that is in the holding tanks that you can see there. And let's see, that's Jan there with the eel. It's you know, they really think outside the box in New Zealand, because when they were part of the British Commonwealth, they were so far removed from the rest of the empire that, you know, if a worker needed a couple of bolts for a piece of machinery, he had to wait 12 months to receive that order from mainland or from England. So they became a very inventive and ingenious population down there. One of the core sayings is, you know, the number 8 gauge wire. That means they figured out how to repair everything from plows to diesel engines using a number 8 gauge kind of a baling wire. So, you know, it was the duct tape of the time, more or less. And so she has, this is Jan right here on the edge. She's the widower of one of the most progressive farmers in the area who still runs the eels program. They have a multitude of animals, you know, sheep, some alpacas, and if you ever want to hear what it sounds like, so this is Jan calling her sheep. She's hysterical. And there's Chloe just hanging out with an alpaca. You know, you do this every day in New Zealand. So again, just really hands-on, great people. And we also learned the finer points of the merino wool, which is a mainstay in New Zealand. They are extremely proud of their wool production. And, you know, they really promoted wool so much that, you know, I was always hesitant because, you know, I always grew up with allergies and it was super itchy and, you know, really irritating. But Jan convinced us all to go with wool, and later on in the trip, we made it down to Queenstown, and we happened to catch all the winter sales, because they were in summer, so they were offloading all their winter gear, and with a favorable exchange rate, a lot of us were able to load up on some good merino stuff, and it works as billed. It's perfect. And then right after we learned about the sheep, we were able to hop in kayaks and paddle down one of the local rivers to the Raglan Harbor. This was a great estuary where we were actually able to find some freshwater oysters that the cook on the boat was able to cook up for us right then and there. So not even probably 15 or 20 minutes elapsed from when we harvested the oysters to be able to eat them. So that was really special. And once we were on the boat, we probably got our very first introduction to the Maori culture, which is the native population of New Zealand. They're a Polynesian descendant, and the boat captain was one of the true success stories of, you know, the Maori people. He was taken in by Charlie, the surf school owner, who was partnered with the farm and was really cultivated and brought up to be, you know, a ship captain, which is a really big deal for, you know, a non-white in New Zealand. And we probably got the most meaningful introduction to the Maori culture through him. I guess not only because it was our first introduction, but because he was genuinely interested in us. And it wasn't a canned, you know, orchestration or, you know, a program. He was genuinely excited to share his culture with us. So that made it really special. And what he's doing there with Matthew is that's the way they greet each other. Not only do you shake hands, but you generally touch noses or foreheads together so that you share the life breath of each other. You kind of share each other's essence. And it's just very, very neat introductions. These are just some great rock formations. Being a rock climber, of course, I'm drawn to that as well. So, and life is better when you surf. That's pretty much the way everything goes in Raglan. Just a shot of some of our gear. We traveled kind of heavy for 17 days, except for Chloe back there on the third row. She packed everything into a briefcase, pretty much. Our next stop was in Waitomo, which where the famous glowworm caves are. And this area was really interesting because it mirrored what we have in Kentucky. Very karst-driven, lots of caves, except they have really cool glowing worms in their caves, where we just have, you know, blind fish, which are still cool, but not quite as awe-inspiring as glowing worms. Right after that, do we have any Tolkien fans here? Yes, Hobbiton. If you recognize this, this is the pathway where Gandalf first enters the Shire and is greeted by Frodo. And there we have Hobbiton. And we were told that Peter Jackson chose this location specifically for that tree, and because there is no 20th century artifacts within sight except for one barn about 5 miles away. So it was really easy for them to paint that barn green and have no other infrastructure, power lines, telephone lines, buildings, that they could really transform this into Middle Earth without, you know, much issue at all. And of course we made it up to Bag End and we said hello to Bilbo. And you know, our study abroad office at the university had one request for a photo, and this was it. You know, the group in front of Bag End. We also got to try out some Hobbit games. Some were more successful than others. Went over the mill and had a snack at the Green Dragon, which is played prominently in the first Lord of the Rings movie, where everybody got together and had a drink. Our next stop was just outside of a town called Rotorua, and this is Tamaki Village. And it is an immersion experience into the Maori culture. So this is where we really got a lot of the history and much more detail about the Maori and how, you know, their social structure is and the meanings of everything. So this was our guide, Jameis, with Dr. Poth. And, you know, we got there early before, you know, the 7 o'clock, you know, show or whatever. And we spent all afternoon in Tamaki Village and with Jameis just really giving us an honest and good introduction to the Maori culture and provided much more detail into, you know, their arts and their customs and everything. So it was really fantastic time to have one-on-one with him. The students were able to ask tons of questions. Almost nothing was off limits, and you know, it was really great insight into the culture. And this is a great game that they used to teach coordination with the young kids. Let me get this video going. pretty easy when you're going just to your neighbor. But that one, if it hadn't jumped, they had to throw it across their neighbor, and you had to gather, catch the one coming from the person on the other side of the person next to you. So it was pretty challenging. I don't know, how long did it take, Chloe? A good 20 minutes to get it down. And then the real show started with the native Maori, many of which still live and work. Their numbers are really prevalent. They've been the government of New Zealand has really adopted them. It's a source of national pride, and so they're very highly regarded with the New Zealanders at large. Thankfully, Dr. Poff was selected to be our representative, so he had to decide whether or not he was going to pick up the fern leaf and be peaceful or step on it and declare war. Thankfully, he chose peace, and we were able to tour a traditional Maori village and get to know a lot of the reenactors and the people that that worked there. Lots of sleeping. And then our next stop was the largest geyser in the Southern Hemisphere. This is the Pohutu Geyser. It's not as regular or scheduled as Old Faithful was, so we didn't actually see it get to erupt, but you know, the steam vents and the smell of sulfur was very prevalent, so we knew it was working. And then, as I mentioned, sheep are kind of a big deal in New Zealand. They outnumber people 10 to 1, so 4 million people in New Zealand, same population as Kentucky, you know, 30 to 40 million sheep. So it's probably more common to be trampled by a stampede of sheep than to be injured by a person. And they know their sheep. This was in the Agrodome, one of the more commercialized farming operations, but you know, the Merino sheep takes top because that's the most famous sheep, and there's at least 20 other varieties of sheep that they have in New Zealand. This guy gave us a good demonstration of shearing. He had that sheep shorn in about 20 seconds. they know what they're doing. And we got to play with, you know, some baby lambs, so that was pretty awesome. Moving on, in Rotorua, does that tree look familiar? Something you'd normally see in California? The redwoods were brought to New Zealand because the conditions there are so favorable that a redwood tree grows about 3 times as fast as it does in California. Now, that's great to look at, but that makes the wood not conducive to using it for anything. So while they're very pretty and you know, they look great, it's just, you know, you can't use the wood for anything because it grows so fast that it doesn't have time to build in the structure to make the wood actually usable. We are able to see a couple of kiwi, which is the native bird in New Zealand, and couldn't actually take a picture of one because they're a nocturnal animal and there's very few left. There's almost, so it's hard to take a picture in almost pitch black conditions of this little bird scampering around. Fun fact about the kiwi, although it looks like it has a really long beak, it's actually has one of the shortest beaks in the bird family, because the way the beak is measured from the nostril to the end of the beak, you'd think that, you know, the nostrils are back here, but the nostrils of the kiwi are actually at the very tip of the beak, so it can smell things going under underground. And then we made it to Auckland. This is the largest city in New Zealand. It's generally where all flights in and out of the country originate, and it has a population of about 1.7 million people. So it's normal metropolitan city. It's you know, got everything you need. Dr. Poff and I made it a nightly trip to this little gelato spot that he found. Thankfully, they had sorbet for non-lactose people like me. It was fantastic, very artisan, and really amazingly good. Right outside of Auckland, we drove about 4 hours up to the top of the North Island, to the Bay of Islands, where we had a swim with dolphins experience, which was pretty fantastic. They eluded us for quite a while, but we were able to find a couple of pods of dolphins, and everybody got within 5 feet of a dolphin, I think, that day. I know I was able to get just within arm's reach, and it was pretty spectacular. And then from Auckland, we flew down to the very bottom end of the North Island to the capital of Wellington. And one of our first stops was this building right here. It's the Te Papa Museum, and that's the National Museum of New Zealand. And so very rich in the Maori culture and just everything New Zealand. So this is the skeleton of a kiwi bird, and that is the actual size of an egg that it carries. It's about 6 times normal, larger than a normal, I guess, ratio for bird to egg. So we were told that as the egg grows, it pushes all the organs of the kiwi bird basically through its throat. So once it lays the egg, it lays down and rests for about 3 weeks for everything to kind of get back in position. And this exhibit is was one of the big Maori exhibits. This tells, this whole room, and you'll see it on the next photo too, tells the story of, you know, the Maori people. Help me out, Raymond. Is it Mother Earth and Father Sky? Or was it the other way around?
Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Okay. So, yeah, Mother and Father came together and made Aotearoa, which is the Maori word for New Zealand, which means white cloud in the sky, because there's so much cloud cover over New Zealand, it looks like a white cloud, you know, in the middle of the ocean. And so that's their creation story. And then just opposite of that is the National Marae, which is a meeting house in Maori. And again, this tells the story of the Maori culture. So you have, you know, the guardian or, you know, the person in charge of that, and then, you know, different family members, you know, go off from that, and it, you know, tells a story of, you know, the local village or the people of that area. And just some great locations. Got to sample a lot of great food in Wellington. And back to Lord of the Rings. This is the famous get off the road scene in Lord of the Rings. You can see that's where they're hiding from the Nazgul right there, and that's just below here. You can see the tree. That tree is right there in the frame, so that was a really neat location. And just right in the middle of town, too. And from that location, we went to the filming scene of Rivendell, which looks nothing like it does in the movies. And we got to explore that provincial park quite a bit, and they had a fantastic suspension bridge. Our lodging varied throughout the whole trip to really introduce the students to different operations and different ways of getting around. In Wellington, we stayed at a hostel. In Waitomo, we stayed at a couple of cabins at a campground. In Auckland, we stayed at, you know, one of the really nice hotels next to the Sky Tower that we had pictures of there. And then in Queenstown, we stayed in kind of an apartment type hotel accommodations that was through Best Western. So we really, the only thing we didn't get to do was camp, which would have been my preference. But, you know, we'll take some 3 or 4 star accommodations. It was pretty great. Our next day in Wellington, we spent with the two tourism offices in New Zealand. We spent the morning with the Maori New Zealand Tourism, and they walked us through the different Maori aspects in Wellington and had a great lunch at one of the busiest cafes in Wellington. And then that afternoon, we spent with Tourism New Zealand, the national tourism board that promotes New Zealand on a worldwide basis. and because they're British, everything is opposite of what we have. And thankfully, they put down some paint to remember to look right and not left when crossing the street. And quick jam session. We were on the flight down to the South Island to the adventure capital of New Zealand in Queenstown, right in the middle of the South Island. And this is where my heart lies as a trail runner and rock climber, mountain climber. This is, if you want to do anything adventurous or you have any inclination to adrenaline, this is your place in New Zealand. We started off with probably one of our few actual classroom days with the Queenstown Resort College. And it's a two-year college that specializes in the hospitality and adventure tourism and recreation, specifically for the Queenstown area and the South Island. Our class was a very experiential class. We not only participated in all the activities, which was the best part, but then the students were able to talk to and interview the business owners and the local tourism commissions and their chamber of commerces to really get a better understanding of how integrated tourism and recreation is to New Zealand. Because aside from sheep and dairy, tourism is by far the number one industry there. So they take it very seriously. That afternoon, we hopped out of Queenstown to tour the Shotover River and do a jet boat tour, more bus time. And so the Kiwis invented jet boating, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's a boat fueled by jets. So think of a really big jet ski. And on the river, it's like, yeah, that's pretty nice, except that the rivers generally look like this. And we're going probably 30, 40 miles an hour in 6 inches of water. Let's see if this video plays. So there's not a whole lot of room for error on this river. And it may not look like it, but we are moving fast. Yeah. And that's the bridge where one of the very first bungee jumping apparatuses was tested. And so that's jet boating on the Shotover River, and Chloe enjoyed it. So a little information on the Shotover River, that at the time, this was a big gold, there was a huge gold rush and gold mining river. So we got to pan for a little bit of gold. Dr. Poff actually found the most gold with 3 or 4 flakes. But at the time that it was at the height of its gold mining, this was the most productive gold the most productive gold river in the world, beating out any river in Alaska or California. And that's sunset on Wakatiku, and that's about 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. And we also got to tour the very first commercial bungee jumping operation at A.J. Hackett, and got to see lots of people diving to near certain death only to be jerked up at the last possible second. And they even got it dialed in so well you could customize how far you wanted to get dunked into the river. So if you just wanted your fingertips, they could adjust it to that. If you wanted a full dunk up to your ankles, they could accommodate that as well. And then one of the highlights of the trip for me as a photographer was to embrace my inner Ansel Adams and visit the 8th wonder of the world in Milford Sound. This was by far one of the most awe-inspiring areas that I've ever been. Even though it was rainy, cold, and foggy, I really didn't mind because it was still so just amazingly beautiful. And the scale is just out of control. So this tiny little waterfall there is 3 times as tall as Niagara Falls. And that little blip right there, that's a rather large cruising boat, you know, like almost a cruise ship. So, you know, it's just amazing to see the way, the peaks come just straight out of the sound, and the only other place that's like this are the fjords in Norway, and so it's truly one of a kind. Lots of waterfalls, and just fantastic. So that's the same waterfall that's 3 times taller than Niagara Falls. And after all that excitement, we had a couple days to mill around Queenstown on our own. So I do what I do best and find the tallest thing with a trail outside of town and take off running. So I found a peak called Ben Lomond, which had a trail that left not far from our hotel, and found a couple of other trail runners on the trail with me. They were much better and sure-footed than I was, but you know, I loved being up in the mountains, and started off nice and foggy and cleared up by the time we hit the top. And not bad for a 5,000 foot vertical day, which is the equivalent of about 490 flights of stairs. And so that's me and my element. It was fantastic. Another rest day. The next day, a bunch of the students and I rented a mountain bike. Again, everything is opposite, not only on the mountain bikes, but on cars. So what we normally associate with the rear brake on the right side is actually the front brake. And poor Zach did an endo and found that out the hard way. and then it was wheels up from Queenstown, back to Auckland, and then back home. And this was pretty much our whole trip. We flew in to Auckland, went down to Raglan, and then this is Waitomo, Rotorua, Tamaki Village, and then the Bay of Islands is way up here. So we, almost got to the very top of the North Island, flew down to Wellington right here, spent our couple days there, flew down to Queenstown, and had to drive all the way around Fiordland National Park to get to Milford Sound, because of course there's no direct road there. It's kind of like going to Scottsville via Nashville, more or less. And then, we flew back to Auckland and back home. So that was our trip in a thing. So, and that's the quintessential New Zealand saying. It's sort of like we would say cool, or that's great, everything is sweet ass, bro. So, any questions? Yes?
What is the percentage of the population that are Maori compared to the rest of the population? Like 10%?
I want to say it's, Raymond, you'll have to help me out with this, 20%?
You said there's only 4 million.
All right, there's only 4 million people, and it's probably, I would say, 20 to 25%. They actually have a good showing, and you're considered Maori even if you're like a 16th, percent, because they're, so prevalent, having, been colonized for so long, that even if, you look like me and you have a couple of drops of Maori in you, you're still considered Maori.
What was the temperature like? Sometimes you're wearing jackets, other times
with it was summer there in January, but we really experienced all four seasons except for winter. There were times when it was super hot and it was probably 80 or 90 degrees, and then there were times where it was 60 and we had coats on. Another thing to note was that because New Zealand lies within the hole in the ozone layer, there's no UV filtering, so you can get the worst sunburn of your life in no time. So they're very adamant about either wear long sleeves and long pants or wear SPF 300 sunscreen, because you got burnt. And it wasn't a burn that went away in a couple days. A couple of students got burned on our first kayak trip, which was day two or three, and they were sunburnt the entire time from that same burn. So they take their sun care very seriously down there as well. Yep. Anything else? Anybody want to go to New Zealand?
Yes.
Yes? Okay, good, because we're going back in January of 2018. we have a couple of cards that has info on our website, and there's a few prints that I have up here as well for you to look at. Dr. Poff and I produced a photo book for all the students, and we have a sample of that for you to look at too that has even more photos than I showed here, and the Spirit magazine, the WKU alumni magazine, featured our trip on a couple of on actually quite a few pages, and so we brought some examples of that too. So, and of course, I'd be happy to entertain any questions afterwards or now or.
Who goes to New Zealand in terms of tourism? Adventure tourism? Who else?
Just about anybody will go to New Zealand. The Asians are a big population there as far as tourism because it is so close, and you know it's deemed mostly safe. And then a lot of Europeans, we saw a lot of Americans there. We saw everybody from just about every corner of the globe goes to New Zealand. Again, because they do such a good job at promoting themselves and making the rest of us very jealous.
Recently, I noticed an article complaining about the high cost of living in places like Auckland, and they were encouraging people, paying them to move out of the city was so expensive. Did you experience any of that because of the...
It's kind of hard to say. I mean, the cost of living there is higher than normal because it takes forever to get anything there. Like, everything, like any industrial equipment, any major goods have to be shipped in. And it's a long boat ride from just about anywhere. And so, you know, that really contributed to, I guess would contribute to the high cost. You know, their agriculture is pretty self-sustained. It's one of the most conservative and sustainable countries that I've ever visited. They're very progressive as far as what goes in and out of the country, and their standards for quality are incredibly high. And this is because they know they have a very contained ecosystem, and you know they've put a lot of resources into maintaining that ecosystem and not letting any outside influence come disrupt it. Because you know they're on an island in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, you know they don't have you know very many layers to fall back on.
Well, yeah. One more question back here.
Julie, you had a question?
Yeah. Did you find a local race or run a local race?
I did happen to find a local 5K while I was there in Wellington, and ran my fastest 5K while I was there, despite the 30 mile per hour winds. So I was.
Was that your back before?
You know, it changed depending on where you went, but it was not at my back very much.
back here?
Yep, John?
Did you try any of the local wine?
We did.
they have a fairly substantial.
They do. They have their own version of Napa Valley, both on the North and South Island. That is a very productive region and great wine.
Well, and then on behalf of our sponsor, WKU Libraries Friends Organization, we want to thank you very much for showing us some spectacular pictures. I'm ready to go.
All right.